And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble X, and Facebook. You can catch the show live 24/7 via podcast by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088 or again their website lawgroupnc.com. We've got a packed Thursday morning coming up, as we've got a big state news, a national news continuing to unfold as well, the Jeffrey Epstein saga, as well as some additional details from Tulsi Gabbard and DNI on what many are describing as the largest political cover-up in history, with the Barack Obama administration completely manufacturing the so-called Russia collusion hoax. We've got details on all of that, and we'll get into that throughout the show. However, we do start off with some major North Carolina political news being reported by both Axios and Politico yesterday. It does appear that former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper is set to enter the Senate race. Some sources say it could happen Monday, others indicating that it could happen sometime early next week. But it does appear that the two-term Democrat governor here in North Carolina is going to give up his cushy job at Harvard University and will likely decide to run for the North Carolina Senate race. Of course, that seat vacated by now current and soon-to-be former Senator Tom Tillis after he announced back last month, after sparring with President Donald Trump both publicly and privately over the One Big Beautiful Bill, that he was done and he was out. And now, while many of those on the right, many conservatives applaud Tillis getting out of the race, it is going to be very tough to beat somebody like Roy Cooper. And that's just the fact. Don't shoot the messenger. You know, regardless of what you think of Roy Cooper, and there was a great comment on our Nick Craig Show Facebook page yesterday. See if I can pull that up real quick. It was by a good friend of mine, Matt. And he wrote this comment, and it's a very accurate one. He says, "Unfortunately, there's a lot of Republicans that will vote for him because they believe he was a good governor. Let me be clear, I'm not one of those people." And that's a very accurate assessment. And I pulled some recent polling data. This is back from May, and the most recent Carolina Journal poll. And in these Carolina Journal polls, there's a question typically of favorability of candidates. And so the question was asked, what is your image and what's your favorability of Roy Cooper? And these numbers are incredibly high. His favorability rating, again, this is a May poll, things can change, but this gives you a pretty good cross-section of where North Carolinians stand right now. His favorability is 47.5%, compared to an unfavorability of 36.6%. That's a significant advantage for him in terms of his image. And it's why many folks have deemed and coined him Teflon Roy. Nothing sticks to him. He does a great job, even though there's an incredible amount of controversy and a whole bunch of issues during his 8 years as governor. He has been able to manufacture this situation around him where things just don't stick. And that's the fact of the matter. Whether you think Roy Cooper was a good governor or not, I'm not of the camp that he was a good governor. He is very popular. You compare and contrast his favorability rating to that of Donald Trump's in this same poll, Trump at 45, but favorable, 50, unfavorable. Roy Cooper is more than 10 points above water. And that's not a one-off thing. This is not some random flash poll that is inaccurate. If you go back and look at Roy Cooper's tenure as governor here in North Carolina, you will consistently see over and over again that his favorability is incredibly high. Even though he was embattled in controversy, even though he shut down the state of North Carolina during COVID, tried to shut down churches, was effective at shutting down private businesses, putting many of them out to never reopen again. But those controversies, regardless, Roy Cooper still has this, again, very high favorability rating as it relates to North Carolina voters. Now, I will say this, even with the COVID shutdowns, of course, NCOR, the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, the disastrous response to Hurricanes Matthew and Florence, there's still over 1,000 people in Eastern North Carolina almost 10 years later that are still without their homes. That is solely the responsibility and solely the fault of Democrat Governor Roy Cooper. These things will come up. Roy Cooper has been in state politics now for over 30 years, since the 90s. And with that, he has obviously been successful in winning. He was the attorney general for, like, I don't know, 12 years or something like that. It was a long time. He was the AG, then served his two terms as governor. This Senate race is going to be something like he's never seen before, right? When you're running for governor, you're running for attorney general, it's a different animal. This North Carolina Senate race that is presumably going to kick off as early as next week with Roy Cooper making his announcement is going to be something like Roy Cooper has never seen. The criticism, the attacks, the nastiness that politics are, again, you can say, oh, I wish politics weren't so nasty. That's fine. I mean, I wish I had a gazillion dollars, but that doesn't, neither of those two things are going to happen. So it's irrelevant whether you think it should or shouldn't be. That's the reality of the political system right now. And Roy Cooper is going to deal with having to face these controversies head on. He's going to have to face the controversies of telling folks to stay in their house with a mask, yet going out on the streets and marching with Black Lives Matter in 2020. That's a real thing that happened. There are real images of Roy Cooper going out and marching with BLM during the COVID lockdowns when you were told to stay inside your house. I mean, this image right here, this is a low resolution version of it, but this image is going to come back and likely bite Roy Cooper straight in the ass, because this is a damning picture. This is May or June of 2020 when he told people to stay in their homes, when he instructed law enforcement to essentially arrest people if they were leaving their homes, yet he's out in the streets marching with a bunch of Black Lives Matter activists. Those things are going to come back and bite him. Attempting to shut down churches to then be slapped down by the courts, that's going to come back and bite him. Having the disastrous response to Hurricanes Matthew and Florence, those are going to be major issues in this campaign that he is going to have to deal with. Now, Roy Cooper's been very fortunate. The media in North Carolina, of course, almost exclusively owned and operated by those ideologically on the left. So they've always been very friendly to Roy. Everything that he does is perfect. There's never any controversy going on with him. It's because media in North Carolina is largely run by the left. But when you take this race, which will be the most expensive and arguably the most prominent Senate race in the United States next year, that is going to bring in an incredible amount of outside conversation. You are going to have Fox News and CNN and MSNBC and these major networks talking about this Senate race. That doesn't really happen with a gubernatorial race. Yes, it's talked about. Yes, it's mentioned, but it doesn't have broad national appeal. So the major cable news networks, yeah, they mention it here and there. They'll talk about it in a string of topics, but it's not a main discussion point. It's not a consistent conversation. That will be the case with this Senate race. This will be a top story as we get closer to the primary and as we go through the spring and summer months of next year in 2026, when this race will, you'll have your Republican and your Democrat candidate, you know, teeing off and battling off against each other. It's going to be a national discussion and a national conversation multiple times a week. And I'm not sure Roy Cooper's ever dealt with that. And so it's going to be interesting to see, even though his favorability is very high right now, once the media, once activist groups and super PACs and other groups get into this and start reminding individuals what happened during COVID, what happened with the response to Hurricane Helene, what happened with the Duke Slush Fund. I mean, there are a lot of Duke Energy Slush Fund. There are a lot of controversies that Roy Cooper has. He's been able to deflect a lot of them in large part due to the dishonest media here in North Carolina that refused throughout his gubernatorialship to ever comment on these issues, refused to ever hold him accountable and hold his feet to the fire. So the vast majority of people are of the mindset that Roy Cooper was a phenomenal governor. right? You had Republicans in the General Assembly reshaping the state of North Carolina, cutting taxes, reducing burdensome regulation, and making this state one of the best places in the country to not only do business, but to live. Roy Cooper was the figure piece for all of that as the governor, and he was able to take a lot of credit for that. And he's the governor. He's going to take credit for wins out of the General Assembly. There's no way around that. But he's not without controversy. And so that's what's going to be interesting to watch over the coming weeks, months, and over a year now, or going into a year. What does that criticism look like? And does any of that criticism stick to him? And how does that reflect in polling numbers of his approval, his image, what people think of him? So that's the major North Carolina political news that we are tracking this morning. Former Governor Roy Cooper set to announce as early as potentially Monday that he is officially getting in to the North Carolina Senate race. That, of course, brings forth the question, who is the RN Republicans nominee going to be? Who is going to be the GOP candidate? You know, a couple of names still at the top of the list. Of course, President Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, is one of those main names. She was seen, I think, accurately by many as the front runner. If she decided to get into the race, she would obviously be able to get the endorsement from her father-in-law. Republicans across the state would coalesce behind her. She is seen as the strongest candidate. But as I've mentioned before, and I'll mention again this morning, I think she'd be insane to run for this seat. This is going to be a knockout, drag-out, nasty political battle in North Carolina. She had the opportunity to take over a United States Senate seat in Florida with Marco Rubio being sucked into the administration as the Secretary of State, and she passed on that opportunity in a very safe seat in the state of Florida. She, of course, is from North Carolina, grew up in Wrightsville Beach, so she's got those ties. She campaigned here a lot for her father-in-law, was with him a lot whenever he was in the state of North Carolina. I just don't know that she wants this job. She's got a very successful show on Fox News. She's got young children. This is going to be a major, you know, change of lifestyle and change of pace for Laura Trump. I'm not saying she's not up to it. I'm not saying that she's not capable of doing it. But it's going to be a significant change. And if I'm her in her position, I don't know why I'd want the position. I don't know why I'd want the job with everything that she's got going for her right now. So she, of course, is one of the front runners. Of course, we've got our congressional delegation. Rumors that Michael Whatley, the head of the Republican National Committee, is one of the top names on the list as well. Except I don't expect that you'll see an announcement from a GOP candidate anytime soon. There are a couple of other candidates in that race. They have reached out to me over the last couple of weeks. We'll work to try and get them on the show, but no well-known candidate has really come forth. There are a couple of individuals, again, no disrespect to them at all, but they don't have the ability to raise money or have the ability to, or have the name ID to run in a race against an incredibly popular two-term governor here in North Carolina. And so Republicans, you know, I'll say this, we got our wish. We got our wish in Senator Tom Tillis announcing he wasn't going to run for re-election. I hope that that wish does not result in a Democrat holding the one of the two North Carolina Senate seats. Roy Cooper is a political juggernaut. He is going to be an incredibly hard individual to beat. And so we'll keep an eye on this as we transition into next week and see exactly what this announcement looks like and continue to watch us what goes on the right side of the political aisle as to who the major GOP candidate is coming forward. I would expect for the GOP sometime around Labor Day is when you'd probably see an official announcement. It's possible that Roy Cooper getting into the race when he is could maybe force the GOP's hand a little bit and force some of these candidates to step forward. Not immediately sure exactly how all of that is going to play out, but we'll keep an eye on that right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, as I mentioned yesterday morning, they're starting a new feature, kind of a new addition to the program. It's called The Morning Line. It's a daily email that we'll be publishing each and every morning around 6:30. It includes a morning take. Obviously, the top thing this morning was the announcement that this new email newsletter was going to be coming out. It includes your latest weather for southeastern North Carolina, either a local, state, and national story, and then the link to yesterday's podcast. I encourage folks to go and subscribe to that. You can head on over to the website, which is nickcraig.com. You'll see a button here on the bottom left. Get the daily North Carolina headlines and podcast episodes. You can throw your email address in there and get the what we're calling the morning line each and every weekday morning. That's going to come out around 6:30. And you can subscribe to that, forward it to your friends, share it around as we continue to grow the base, grow the audience here on the Nick Craig Show. All right, on to some national news this morning. A major step forward and many more details coming to light in yesterday's White House press briefing. Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was joined by DNI's Tulsi Gabbard, who has, of course, made a lot of news over the last week for her declassification of over 100 documents as it related to the so-called 2016 Trump-Russia collusion scandal hoax, whatever you want to call it, as many of us have known for years now, completely manufactured, not based in any sort of actual evidence or reality. But it was a major political story. It was something that controlled a lot of the narrative in the first Trump administration. And what many of these documents show from Tulsi Gabbard, the ones that she declassified, is that the intelligence communities, at the direction of Barack Obama, manufactured information, manufactured intelligence to paint this picture, to draw this narrative that, in fact, Donald Trump was somehow colluding with a foreign entity known as Russia. This is a very long press briefing, but I think it's important to listen to. So we're going to jump in and out of this. This is Karoline Leavitt yesterday in the press briefing room describing this. They've got a couple of graphics, and then Tulsi Gabbard comes up, goes through it, and then answers some questions. A very, very important White House press briefing yesterday afternoon, I should say.
On another matter, over the past few days, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard has unveiled shocking new evidence that former President Barack Obama and top aides in the Obama administration conspired to subvert President Trump's 2016 election victory and undermine the democratic will of the American people. While publicly pretending to engage in a peaceful transfer of power, in private, former President Obama went to great and nefarious lengths to try to sow discord among the public and sabotage his successor, President Trump. The new evidence released by the Director of National Intelligence, who is here with me today, confirms that the Obama administration manufactured politicized intelligence, which was later used as the justification for baseless smears against President Trump in an effort to try to delegitimize his victory before he even took the oath of office. The truth is that President Trump never had anything to do with Russia, and the Russia collusion hoax was a massive fraud perpetuated on the American people from the very beginning. And the worst part of this is Obama knew that truth, and so did all of the other corrupt officials involved in this scam, including former CIA Director John Brennan, former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, former FBI Director James Comey, former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, and many others. Director of National Intelligence Gabbard's report further confirms what we already knew. There was no collusion, no corruption, except on the part of Barack Obama and the weaponized intelligence agencies at the time. The Russia hoax was a blatant lie, all ginned up by Democrat political operatives that were signed off on by then-President Obama and leaked to the news media to launch a years-long witch hunt against President Trump and his first administration. Allies of the president, including his own son, Donald Trump Jr., were disgustingly smeared as Russian assets, and some even had their lives destroyed because of this vicious lie. The president's first 2 years in office had this fake distraction hanging over it, and endless resources, time, and political capital were spent having to debunk these lies from the highest levels of our government. Now, nearly 10 years later, thanks to the declassification of documents by Director Gabbard, the truth has finally come to light. And this truth vindicates President Trump, his family, and his many allies and associates who were smeared with defamatory lies. President Trump was right from the beginning about all of this, and we are grateful that justice can be served. Now, we have even more damning evidence implicating those who tried to sabotage a duly elected president and did grave material harm to our republic. Thanks to additional important work done by CIA Director Ratcliffe, Committee Chairman Rick Crawford over the past few months, a newly declassified 2020 report prepared by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, which DNI Director Gabbard has declassified, found that the intel community did not have any direct information that Russian President Vladimir Putin wanted to help elect President Trump in 2016. And in fact, Russia was actively preparing for a Hillary Clinton victory. But at the unusual direction of Barack Obama at the time, the intel community published implausible intelligence suggesting otherwise. Why? To sabotage the incoming president. This is truly one of the greatest political scandals in American history. And reporters at legacy outlets, some of which are sitting in this room today, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, were ridiculously awarded Pulitzer Prizes for their perpetuation of this hoax. It's well past time for those awards to be stripped from the journalists who receive them. It is not journalism to propagate political disinformation in service of the Democrat Party and those in the intelligence community who hand over out of context and fake intelligence to push a false political narrative. I will now pass it over to the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, to speak more about all of this, and then we will open it up for questions afterwards. Tulsi.
And so you've got the layout there from Caroline Leavitt, who walks through the situation that unfolded and walks through how you've got what was, again, very low confidence reports at the very best that all of a sudden, out of the blue, randomly became, oh, high confidence. Oh, this is exactly what was happening. This is exactly what is happening. Completely manufactured, completely made up, all in an attempt to try and usurp the will of the American people, who in some cases just a month and a half before had chosen Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, the Democrat candidate, to become the 45th president of the United States. And so that's the background, that's the groundwork that is laid to make this situation unfold the way in which it did. And it's an incredibly damning situation for the Obama administration, for not only the administration, but Barack Obama himself and the individuals he has surrounded him or had surrounded himself with, Comey and Clapper, the other folks in the intelligence communities that were manufacturing, making up, right? When you manufacture something, you're making it. Manufacturing intelligence to fit this narrative. It's an incredibly tough situation that the Obama administration is now facing. It's amazing. Again, you and I, the vast majority of folks on the right, knew that there was no basis in this, knew that there was no evidence to back up these claims in any way, shape, or form. Yet, for the last almost 10 years, you've had Democrats on cable news running around the country talking about how Trump is a Russian agent. Trump is working with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He's in debt to the Russian president for allowing him and helping him become president. It's been nonsense. It was nonsense the entire time. And the whole situation is just completely insane. Some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Fake news watchers have always believed the Russia collusion, Putin puppet and propaganda. It thawed out the last two election cycles and after. Well, of course, right? Because it's a good narrative. And as I mentioned yesterday and talked about on Monday, because the Democrats are incapable of winning, because the Democrats had absolutely no ability to self-reflect on their own failures, they determined that the solution going forward was to make it out that that Donald Trump was owned by a foreign entity, that Barack Obama was Donald Trump was an illegitimate president because he was helped by a foreign adversarial nation to become the 45th president of the United States. Not only did this happen under Obama's watch, but these reports from Tulsi Gabbard at DNI show that he had his hands in the cookie jar this whole time. And in some cases, he may have been the one orchestrating what was going on. He was the one that was telling the intelligence communities, yeah, that low confidence report, it's not good enough. Go back and find something else. That's how you manufacture intelligence. When you get a report and you go, doesn't really fit the narrative I'm trying to craft, doesn't really fit the situation I'm trying to portray, come back with something new. That's what they did. They manufactured it and came back to Barack Obama. So we'll get into some of Tulsi Gabbard's comments coming up here in just a few minutes. Before we continue this morning, I do want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, I've got breaking news out of the North Carolina Senate race. Plus, we'll get back to Tulsi Gabbard and more as the Nick Craig Show rolls on, streaming live this Thursday morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and of course, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. We are tracking some breaking news this morning. We were just earlier talking about the North Carolina Senate race and the announcement, or soon to be announcement, from former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper that he is going to jump into that race. Politico breaking news just moments ago. They say they've got it exclusively. It's being confirmed by other sources this morning that RNC Chairman Michael Whatley is set to run for the North Carolina Senate race on the Republican side of the aisle. Reading through the report over at Politico, Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Whatley will run for Senate in North Carolina and will apparently have the blessing of President Donald Trump after his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, is opting not to seek the seat. That's according to two people familiar with the decision telling Politico. Whatley's entrance into the race sets up the prospect of a highly competitive and well-funded election in a state where Democrats believe they have one of their best chances of picking up a Senate seat. The president and the two people familiar with the details believe Whatley is well-positioned to take on former North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, who is expected to announce his candidacy to replace retiring Senator Tom Tillis next week. Laura Trump, who is the president had previously asked to run, has decided to remain the host of her weekly show on Fox News. She is expected to back Michael Whatley, with whom she co-chaired the RNC with last year, and the two will likely appear together in the near future, according to people who were granted anonymity to discuss the plans in advance. Now, here's where things get interesting. A public announcement is expected in the next week to 10 days, according to sources inside the inside the situation, knowing what's going on. And so that is significantly sooner than we were expecting. Again, you know, when you look at the timeline for a political race like this, you've got a primary in March, you've got a general election in November. That's of next year. So, with Roy Cooper announcing sometime next week, that puts Republicans in a position where they can't allow Roy Cooper to take up all the airtime. They can't allow Roy Cooper and the Democrats, right, one and the same. They can't allow the Democrats to completely suck all of the air out of the room and have that be the only conversation. And I can I would imagine that these plans have obviously been going on behind the scenes for quite some time. And with the rumors yesterday from Politico and Axios that Roy Cooper was set to announce as soon as next week, this is putting the Republicans on what you would describe as essentially an expedited timeline, because they are in a position now where they need to be able to combat the Democrat messaging, right? Starting as early as next week, you're going to have Roy Cooper running around the state of North Carolina campaigning for Senate. You can't wait 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks for a Republican to announce, it will give the Democrats a significant advantage, not only in fundraising, but in name ID and, of course, controlling the political narrative. So that is the breaking news this morning. Michael Whatley, the former head of the North Carolina Republican Party, now the head of the Republican National Committee, has the blessing of President Donald Trump. Lara Trump is out, and he is apparently going to step in to this position and will announce his candidacy sometime in the next 10 days. Of course, with that announcement, I am very fortunate to have a great relationship with Michael Whatley. And as soon as that announcement comes out, hopefully we can get him on the show and talk about why he's deciding to run against, again, a political juggernaut in Roy Cooper. This is going to be a wild time here in North Carolina, folks. A lot is going to happen over the next year and a half. There's going to be a lot of national attention here on the state of North Carolina. We'll keep you up to date with all of the breaking details, all of the analysis, and all of the sides of the story right here on the Nick Craig Show. Again, that breaking news. RNC Chairman Michael Whatley set to run for the what will soon be vacant North Carolina Senate race, as Senator Tom Tillis has bowed out. He's not running for re-election. And the report is that Roy Cooper is set to run as the Democrat. Michael Whatley will be the Republican. Those two candidates will clear the field. I'll say that before we move on. Roy Cooper will clear the Democrat primary. Michael Whatley, getting the blessing of not only Lara Trump, but President Donald Trump, should clear the Republican primary. And so from, you know, sometime in the next 2 weeks until November of next year, that is going to be the race. Whatley v. Cooper. It is going to be a fascinating one to watch. We'll, again, be on the front lines of it, keeping you up to date right here on the Nick Craig Show. All right, back to yesterday's White House press briefing, a very interesting press briefing yesterday. A lot of news over the last couple of days as Tulsi Gabbard, the head of DNI, released and declassified about 100 documents indicating that the Obama administration and the intelligence community surrounding Barack Obama manufactured a plethora of information to try and craft the Russia, build this Russia collusion narrative hoax situation that we saw promulgated throughout President Trump's first administration. So Tulsi Gabbard at the White House press briefing yesterday got up. It was introduced by Caroline Leavitt, and this is what she had to say.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. At President Trump's direction and with the support and coordination with the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Rick Crawford, today we've released a declassified oversight majority staff report that was produced in September of 2020. The stunning revelations that we are releasing today should be of concern to every American. This is not about Democrats or Republicans. This has to do with the integrity of our democratic republic and American voters having faith that the votes cast will count. There is irrefutable evidence that detail how President Obama and his national security team directed the creation of an intelligence community assessment that they knew was false. They knew it would promote this contrived narrative that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help President Trump win, selling it to the American people as though it were true. It wasn't. The report that we released today shows in great detail how they carried this out. They manufactured findings from shoddy sources. They suppressed evidence and credible intelligence that disproved their false claims. They disobeyed traditional tradecraft intelligence community standards and withheld the truth from the American people. In doing so, they conspired to subvert the will of the American people who elected Donald Trump in that election in November of 2016. They worked with their partners in the media to promote this lie, ultimately to undermine the legitimacy of President Trump and launching what would be a years-long coup against him and his administration. We're here today because the American people deserve the truth, they deserve accountability, and they deserve justice. The records that we released on Friday that were ODNI records, Senator Chuck Grassley's release on Monday of what is known as the Clinton Annex, which was an appendix to the Department of Justice Office of Inspector General's 2018 report, as well as the House Intelligence Committee's oversight, majority oversight report that we're releasing today, all come back to and confirm the same report. There was a gross politicization and manipulation of intelligence by the Obama administration intended to delegitimize President Trump even before he was inaugurated, ultimately usurping the will of the American people. I'm going to go over the key findings from the House Intelligence Report, which investigated the claims that were made by an intelligence community assessment ordered by President Obama and published in January of 2017.
And that's the key. What she just said there is the key. These intelligence reports that were constructed and ordered to be constructed by the former president of the United States. He was the serving president of the United States at the time in Barack Obama. That is a key portion of this story.
First, Putin's principal interests relating to the 2016 election were to undermine faith in the U.S. democratic process, not show any preference of a certain candidate. In fact, this report shows Putin held back from leaking compromising material on Hillary Clinton prior to the election, instead planning to release it after the election to weaken what Moscow viewed as an inevitable Clinton presidency. In the January 2017 intelligence community assessment that President Obama ordered, John Brennan, who was CIA director at the time, and the intelligence community intentionally suppressed intelligence that showed Putin was saving the most damaging material that he had in his possession about Hillary Clinton until after her potential and likely victory. The report goes into great detail about the information that Russia and Putin had on Hillary Clinton, which included possible criminal acts like secret meetings with multiple named U.S. religious organizations in which State Department officials offered, in exchange for supporting Secretary Clinton's campaign for the presidency, significant increases in financing from the State Department. They also had documents that showed the patronage of the State Department to State Department employees who would go and support Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. There were high-level DNC emails that detailed evidence of Hillary's, quote, psycho-emotional problems, uncontrolled fits of anger, aggression, and cheerfulness, and that then Secretary Clinton was allegedly on a daily regimen of heavy tranquilizers.
Now, this was interesting. A heavy daily dosage of tranquilizers? Was she a freaking horse? Now, you'll all remember one of the most damning things during the 2016 presidential campaign was that video of Hillary Clinton being shoved into the back of a van when she was seemingly like completely stuck in and incapable of moving. You'll remember that video of her, again, just like being pushed into this van as she was standing there, essentially paralyzed. Here is the video of what happened. This is back during the September 11th ceremony in 2016. You can see her like completely incapable of moving and falling to her knees and being shoved into the back of a van. And so when Tulsi Gabbard makes the claim that Hillary Clinton is on a daily regimen of tranquilizers, that's wild. That's not something I'd heard before. I mean, it was blatantly obvious from some of these videos and pictures, but these fits of rage, poor old Bill Clinton having to deal with that. Let's turn it back to Tulsi Gabbard.
Then CIA Director Brennan and the intelligence community mischaracterized intelligence and relied on dubious substandard sources to create a contrived false narrative that Putin developed a quote-unquote clear preference for Trump. Brennan and the IC misled lawmakers by referencing the debunked Steele dossier to assess quote-unquote Russia's plans and intentions, falsely suggesting that this dossier had intelligence value when he knew that it was discredited. The intelligence community excluded significant intelligence and ignored or selectively quoted reliable intelligence that contradicted the intelligence community assessment's key findings on Putin's alleged support for Trump. Including this intelligence reporting would have exposed the ICA's claim as implausible, if not ridiculous. The intelligence community assessment omitted reliably sourced information, such as how some Russian intelligence officials were quote-unquote planning for candidate Hillary Clinton's victory, while others assess neither Trump nor Clinton would respect Russia's interests. As was reflected in the ODNI documents that we released on Friday, multiple intelligence community assessments released in the months leading up to the November 2016 election concluded that Russia had neither the intent nor capability to impact the outcome of the U.S. election. On December 5th of 2016, the FBI and ODNI gave the House Intelligence Committee its first post-election classified briefing, in which there was no mention of Putin aspiring to elect Trump by either agency.
Interesting.
The presidential daily brief, drafted on December 8th of 2016, stated that no Russian or criminal actors impacted vote counts.
So, again, how do you get from there's no evidence whatsoever? We're talking about December. So the election had happened the month before, right? We're talking about December of 2016. The election was in November. We're in early December. We're less than 60 days away, or 45 days away from President Donald Trump being sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. And there's no evidence that Russia impacted anything at all. But those were the intelligence reports that were given at the time and briefed to members of the United States House and Barack Obama at the same time. And then we go from that to Trump needs to be impeached because he worked with Vladimir Putin in Russia to become the president of the United States. Right? How can those two things exist in such a short time frame at the same time? The answer is very simple. They can't, and they didn't. It was all manufactured, all made up.
This document was pulled just hours before it was to be published due to quote-unquote new guidance. If it had been published, it would have been briefed to both President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump. On December 9th, 2016, a National Security Council meeting was called to gather President Obama's senior national security officials, which included CIA Director Brennan, then Obama DNI James Clapper, Susan Rice, and others. Following that secret meeting, DNI Clapper's assistant sent an email to the intelligence community with the subject line, POTUS tasking on Russia election meddling, tasking ODNI leaders to create a new assessment per the president's request. The House Intelligence Committee oversight report that we released today reveals that, quote, unlike routine intelligence community analysis, the intelligence community assessment was a high-profile product ordered by the president. President Obama.
Ordered by the president. Ordered by the president. That's the smoking gun in all of it. Ordered by President Obama at the time. That's the damning part in this.
It directed senior intelligence community agency heads and created an intelligence community assessment limited to just five analysts using one principal drafter. This is not something that occurs in the normal path of producing an intelligence community assessment that reflects the views across the intelligence community.
Well, of course not. I mean, let's just think about that. Of course not. You don't have the president of the United States saying, hey, I don't like what you guys have assessed, that there's little to no or zero confidence that Russia influenced the 2016 election. Go back and find something else. Of course, that's not how intelligence is constructed. That's how intelligence is manufactured.
The production of this intelligence community assessment was subject to unusual directives directly from the president and senior political appointees, especially the former director of the CIA, John Brennan. The House Intelligence Committee oversight report also shows how later that same day on December 9th, Brennan ordered the publication of quote-unquote substandard reporting on Russian activities, which had previously been withheld from publication of prior assessments because the information was judged, quote, to have not met long-standing publication standards. Some of the information later used in the Obama-ordered assessment over the objections of veteran CIA officers was, quote-unquote, unclear or from unknown sources. The Intelligence Committee's oversight report reveals that CIA Director Brennan overruled senior CIA officers who challenged the Obama-ordered intelligence assessment, stating, quote, we don't have direct information that Putin wanted to get Trump elected. Yet, the Obama-directed assessment was published on January 6, 2017, which explicitly stated, quote, we assess Putin and the Russian government aspired to help President-elect Trump's election chances, when possible, by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him. End of quote. The CIA and FBI, then led by John Brennan and James Comey, expressed high confidence in this judgment, while the NSA expressed moderate confidence. Yet, as the report we released today shows, the ICA, the intelligence community assessment, did not cite any report where Putin indicated helping Trump win was an objective. The opposite is true. With regards to the Steele dossier, we now know that one of the source documents that the Obama administration used in the creation of this intelligence assessment in January of 2017 was none other than the discredited, unverified Steele dossier. The House Intel report states, quote,
by the way, the Steele dossier that, as Tulsi Gabbard is laying out, was the crux of this entire thing, was paid for by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. They went out and hired Christopher Steele, a discredited foreign agent over in Great Britain or somewhere over in Europe, to construct the Steele dossier, which was, again, paid for by the Democrats, right? That needs to be stated. The report paid for by the Democrats to find what the Democrats wanted was used as the bedrock foundation for the CIA and the FBI to give advice to Barack Obama, who, by the way, instructed it to be created, that Donald Trump had worked with Vladimir Putin to get elected in 2016. How is this not the biggest political story in modern American history? You've got a former president of the United States using Democrat paid for dossiers as a justification for speaking publicly as the president of the United States to the American people, claiming that the president was illegitimately elected by Russia. I mean, it's just an insane story. We all knew this is what went on. Conservatives and Republicans that supported President Donald Trump, that followed the news at the time, knew the Steele dossier was nonsense, knew that John Brennan and James Clapper were completely full of it in the FBI and the CIA, yet this is the narrative. This is what the media ran with. This is what Democrats on Capitol Hill went on cable news every night. Oh, Donald Trump's a Russian agent. Donald Trump's a puppet of Vladimir Putin. Every freaking night for years. This went on until 2019. And we're now being, documents are now backing up what we all knew, that this was completely manufactured the entire time.
Contradicting public claims by then CIA Director Brennan that the dossier was not in any way incorporated into this intelligence assessment, the dossier was referenced in the intelligence assessment's main body text and further detailed in a two-page assessment annex. John Brennan lied, and he denied using this dossier in this intelligence assessment that President Obama ordered because he knew it was discredited. It was a politically motivated, manufactured document. He directed senior CIA officials to use it anyway. CIA officer told the House Intelligence Committee staff as they investigated this, quote, the director of the CIA, John Brennan, refused to remove it. And when confronted with the dossier's many flaws, responded, quote, yes, but doesn't it ring true? Even the bipartisan Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report published in 2020 criticized the FBI's handling of the Steele dossier, noting its completely unverified nature and purposeful sidestepping of intelligence community procedures in its use. Now, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Brennan, James Clapper, James Comey, and others, including their mouthpieces in the media, knowingly lied as they repeated the contrived narrative that was created in this January 2017 intelligence community assessment with high confidence as though it were fact. John Brennan, as CIA director, stated in a memo to his agency staff in December of 2016, saying, quote, there is strong consensus among us on the scope, nature, and intent of Russian interference in our presidential election. This was reported by NBC News, confirming that Brennan, along with James Clapper and James Comey, agreed with the CIA's assessment that Russia intervened to help Trump win the presidency. As Obama's Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper was tasked with overseeing the creation of this assessment in January of 2017 by President Obama, and he expressed confidence in its findings. In a 2018 interview with the Harvard Gazette, he talked about how he provided Trump with the same classified assessment that President Obama received, which included the high confidence judgment that Putin directly ordered the hacking and election interference. Clapper then went on to add, I think they, the Russians, actually influenced the outcome. This is a brief summary of the details that you'll find within the House Majority Staff's report in their investigation into the Obama-directed January 2017 intelligence community assessment that leads us to the very same conclusion that we announced in the release of our documents on Friday. The implications of this are far-reaching and have to do with the integrity of our democratic republic. It has to do with an outgoing president taking action to manufacture intelligence, to undermine and usurp the will of the American people in that election, and launch what would be a years-long coup against the incoming president of the United States, Donald Trump. Thank you.
I don't typically play clips of that length, but as I watched this live yesterday afternoon, Tulsi Gabbard did an absolutely phenomenal job laying this thing out. She did an absolutely phenomenal job laying out everything that had unfolded, the timeline, the individuals involved, and it's something that, again, we knew. We knew this was the case. We knew there was no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. But that did not stop Barack Obama, John Brennan, James Comey, did not stop the mainstream media. It did not stop Democrats in Congress from running around all over the United States, going on cable news shows, going in newspapers and articles, talking about Trump-Russia collusion, talking about the fact that somehow, with no evidence, with no details, with no corroborating information, that the president-elect at the time was shoehorned into this position by a foreign entity, which is, again, Russia, who allegedly was marionetting this whole thing behind the scenes. It sounded incredibly stupid and absurd when it came to light. It was ridiculously stupid and absurd. And now we find out once again, almost 10 years later, that this whole thing was manufactured. That the first 2 years of the Trump administration with impeachment inquiries, we find out that the entire media coverage of President Donald Trump's first 2 years in office was all predicated on a completely nonsensical report that was ordered by Barack Obama. Yet, as I glance over this morning and look at the news that's going on throughout the United States, I've got Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and BBC America on. What is CNN talking about? Jeffrey Epstein. What is MSNBC talking about? Jeffrey Epstein. They don't want to talk about it. They don't even want to mention it. They don't want to talk about it at all because it points and paints the picture of one of the most large-scale political cover-up stories in modern American history. And I found this phenomenal clip on social media last night. You had Greg Gutfeld on, of course, The Five, completely torching Democrat Jessica Tarlov and her attempt to do exactly what the mainstream media is doing right now. They want to ignore this story. We're not talking about Hillary Clinton's emails again, are we? Let's talk about Jeffrey Epstein. Like the Democrats have ever given a damn about that story. Now it's a huge story for them because there's a political connection. Yet they didn't care about it in the past. Listen to this clip from The Five yesterday. This is the one of the better clips that I've seen over the last couple of months. It is a Greg Gutfeld completely destroying the Democrats' narrative on this Obama thing. Take a listen to this.
I'm a Hillary, and they get activated, and suddenly they won't be mad at Trump anymore for not releasing the Epstein files or whatever he had to do with any of it. It's preposterous that we were talking about Hillary Clinton's emails again in year 2025.
We spent years on this story.
No,
we had to take this story seriously for years, and it was false.
It wasn't false.
No. For people to understand what happened, all right? Because the problem with this story is that nobody knows what you're talking about. When Trump won in 2016, the intel community concluded that Russia didn't have a hand in his victory. Instead of accepting the inclusion, Obama determined and wanted a new conclusion. So he sent Brennan running to come up with a new collusion, that there was some kind of trivial involvement that then they could feed out to the media. And coincidentally, dozens of news organizations said that Trump was in bed with Putin and that somehow Brennan knew. Brennan knew. How did he know?
Why did Durham do nothing?
But no, let me finish. They amplified a false conclusion that Trump colluded with Russia in 2016. We had to spend years dealing with that. And now we're actually getting investigation. And you're saying, no, you know what? You guys should just move on. You guys should just move. You say the same effing thing about Biden's brain. You guys spent 4 years telling us that Joe Biden was fine. You covered up for an invalid. And then when we get the truth, it's like, oh, you know what? It's time. We got to look forward. We got to start talking about what's there. And you can bring up Epstein all you want. We, unlike Democrats, we can handle two things, three things, four things at once. We
doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, no. Have you been listening to the right lately? The right is more on top of Epstein than the Democrats are. The Democrats never cared about Epstein until they saw a political motivation. The right was into the Epstein story because women were being sex trafficked. We actually cared. But now you're like, ooh, Epstein, a political angle. Ooh, this is fantastic. Save me your selective outrage.
Phenomenal from Greg Gutfeld. Absolutely. Everything that needs to be said. Democrats concocted this narrative, ran with it for years. It completely tarnished the first half of the Trump administration. It was the main story on every single freaking cable news network show for 2 years straight. Trump-Russia collusion. And then Katie Tarkov, or whatever the hell her name is on Fox News, has the audacity to claim, well, why are we talking about this? And Greg Gutfeld completely nukes her. You made us talk about this. You guys made this narrative, completely manufactured it out of thin air, and it was the main topic of conversation for years. But now that Barack Obama is implicated as the puppet master behind all of this, now Democrats want to say, why are you talking about Hillary Clinton's emails? And I love what Greg Gutfeld said at the end. You know, let me see if I can pull this part back up where he goes, you guys made us effing talk about this. It's exactly the case. Democrats concocted this, started it, and now because it shows that their guy did something wrong, now they don't want to talk about it. One more time from Greg Gutfeld.
And then when we get the truth, it's like, oh, you know what? It's time. We got to look forward. We got to start talking about what's there. And you can bring up Epstein all you want. We, unlike Democrats, we can handle two things, three things, four things at once. We
doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, no. Have you been listening to the right lately? The right is more on top of Epstein than the Democrats are. The Democrats never cared about Epstein until they saw a political motivation. The right was into the Epstein story because women were being sex trafficked. We actually cared. But now you're like, ooh, Epstein, a political angle. Ooh, this is fantastic. Save me your selective outrage.
He's 100% right. There's no better way to summarize it. I'm not even going to attempt to. That is exactly the summary that needs to be said and needs to be expressed. The right has been talking about Epstein. Trump is getting an incredible amount of pressure over it, as he should be. And now this idea is, oh, well, Republicans are deflecting from Epstein with this. And I think Greg Gutfeld says it very accurately. Why we can't discuss two different things at the same time. We know the Democrats can't. But their only ability is to hone in on one issue. As I glance over this morning, CNN sources Trump's name in the Epstein files, MSNBC Trump implicated in the Epstein files. That's all they're talking about. That's all that they're interested in talking about. The right has been talking about the Epstein thing and this other story for, in the case of the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, for literally a decade. We have been talking about it. And now morons like this idiot on Fox News want to claim, well, we can't talk about the Hillary Clinton emails again, really? These people are such scumbags. It's insane the way that they will twist themselves into a pretzel to justify anything and everything that they need. That they will ignore major political stories for years. And as he notes, look at the Biden situation. You know, you want to talk about more recent history? Let's talk about Joe Biden being nothing more than a freaking vegetable sitting in the Oval Office. Democrats ignored it, claimed it was a right-wing conspiracy theory. Then he drops out of the race after having a disastrous debate performance almost 1 year ago, and now Democrats, including, you know, the illustrious Jake Tapper on CNN, want to lecture about, oh, you know, well, we knew that this was happening at the time, but, you know, we didn't really have any evidence to back it up. But I mean, seriously, save me the outrage. You guys have absolutely no morals and no standards. So, yes, the right can talk about two issues at the same time. The Jeffrey Epstein story is a major political story and one that folks on the right have been yelling and screaming about for years. And why? Because Barack Obama was the puppet master behind a fake intelligence report? We're not allowed to discuss that? To hell with you. It's insane. And just to prove that both things can happen at once, here's the latest on the Epstein saga that we're tracking this morning. Ralph Norman said last night, quote, "We were with the president last night. He's fine. He's going to release everything." Saying a direct quote, "Trump is going to release everything," Norman said. "And if Trump's name was in those files, it'll come out." Thomas Massie said the exact same thing. "There are probably a lot of names in there who haven't done anything criminally, so there's a reluctance to release these files because of the embarrassment just having your name in the news in these files." So there's the latest on the Epstein thing. Why can't we do both? Why can't we claim that Barack Obama constructed one of the largest political conspiracies in modern American history and the Jeffrey Epstein thing? Why? Because one makes the Democrats look bad. Case in point, the Obama constructing fake intelligence. So we're not going to talk about that at all. We're just going to completely wash our hands of that issue and talk about Jeffrey Epstein. And I love what Greg Gutfeld said, and he's spot on. Democrats couldn't care less about Jeffrey Epstein for the last 8 or 9 years. They couldn't care less. But now that there's a Trump angle on it, you've got idiots like Joe Scarborough on MSNBC this morning foaming at the mouth over Epstein. You've got some moron on CNN this morning foaming at the mouth over, oh, Jeffrey Epstein and Trump. Ooh, boogeyman. You guys have absolutely no, you guys have absolutely, I'm talking to those on the left, of course. You have absolutely no high ground to tell the right what we can and can't discuss. You have absolutely no footing to express to the right what they're allowed to talk about and things that they aren't. Anything that involves Trump, you guys attack and you love. And you make it the biggest story that's ever happened. The guy goes to the bathroom in the morning and there's a 17-page expose in the New York Times about it. Yet Barack Obama, James Comey, and John Brennan were behind the scenes concocting fake reports dealing with Russian political collusion in the 2016 election. And you guys are just whistling and walking the other way. The same thing you did with, oh, I don't know, allowing tens of millions of people into the country illegally. Same way that the media handled that, ignored it. Biden's failing mental decline, ignored it. Why did Stephen Colbert's show get canceled? Why is CNN and why are MSNBC failing to view to gain any significant viewership? Because the American people know that you are frauds. The American people know that you are not in the business of truth and fact. The American people know that you are in the business of political spin, and that's all. That's why they're turning you off. That's why they're listening to and watching Fox News. That's why they're turning to independent journalism, podcasts for their information, because they know the garbage that comes out of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, NBC, and CBS is complete and total nonsense. For over a decade now, you guys have lied about everything in order to make your candidates in your party look better. The American people have woken up. They have realized that that's what's going on. They've been able to see with their own two eyes that that's exactly what's happening. And lo and behold, now you have no audience left. Lo and behold, you have no trust left from the American people. And lo and behold, you're shedding advertisers at a crazy rate because you have no audience. None. And you're never going to get it back because you're dishonest. So spare me the outrage over the Jeffrey Epstein story that you guys didn't care about until, oh, I don't know what, three freaking weeks ago? Literally. Didn't even care. Not even 3 weeks. 2.5 weeks ago wasn't even something that Democrats were talking about. Now it's the main story on every single story. Still right now. It's been the main story since I woke up at 4:30 this morning and turned on the news networks. It's all they've been talking about since 4:30 this morning. It's all they care about because of Orange Man Bad and Trump. Getting some comments coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Have the Democrats fallen into the trap of being focused on Epstein while bombshell after bombshell is being released about the real story? Democrats and MSM ignore the real story and will further lose credibility. Exactly. And I don't know if they've fallen into a trap. They're just not interested in being truthful. They're not interested in actually reporting the news because it might make Democrats look bad. And they're not in the business of that. They're not in the business of news. They're in the business of propping up the Democrat Party. That's the business that they're in. You have to understand that. When you turn on CNN, when you turn on MSNBC, unfortunately, and have to listen to this garbage, you have to understand that they don't care if it's truthful or not. They don't care whether it's going to be something that their viewers enjoy or appreciate. They're in it for carrying water and portraying the talking points of the Democrat Party. It's why they have no viewers left. It's why they have no audience left, and it's why they have no ratings. So while big political stories continue to unfold and happen, mainstream media wants to continue to focus on something that, again, according to, this is just hours ago from being reported from Politico, both Ralph Norman and Thomas Massie, who of course is no friend of President Donald Trump, have both come out and both said last night that everything is going to be released. So we'll wait and see and watch what happens there. Unlike the left, we'll actually keep an eye on both stories because, oh, I don't know, we're actually interested in information. Oh, I don't know, we're actually interested in truth being portrayed. I know the left's not. I'm not going to pretend that you guys are, and I hope you don't either, because the American people are able to see through this masquerade that you've set up. It's not working. And it's why you have no audience and really no trust left from the American public. Well, I said it was going to be a busy Thursday. Here we are again, recapping our big stories this morning. It's going to be Cooper v. Whatley for the North Carolina Senate race. Some big details going on there. Tulsi Gabbard laying out an incredible situation that unfolded in the latter parts of 2016, early 2017, as it relates to the Obama administration and completely manufacturing intelligence to show a Russia collusion narrative, and the details out last night that these Epstein files, according to two sources in Congress, both Ralph Norman and Thomas Massie, are set to be released. Everything is apparently going to be released. So we'll patiently wait. And again, you know, I'll make one final point. No, we're running a little long, but I'll make one final point. Unlike the left, which is a cult, even though they claim that the Republicans are a cult and we're just all blind followers of Trump, have you not heard all the controversy at the Trump administration over the Epstein thing, right? You've got major influencers on the right side of the political aisle torching Trump, torching Pam Bondi over this, myself included. Yet the media wants to claim that, oh, everybody just follows what Trump says, hook, line, and sinker. If that was the case, nobody would be talking about Jeffrey Epstein because Trump said, it's not a big deal, don't worry about it. But see, that's not what happened, because unlike the left, Republicans and conservatives portray free thought. We're allowed to have opinions. We're allowed to disagree with individuals in our own political party, and we're not kicked out to the side of the road like, oh, I don't know, Tulsi Gabbard, who, by the way, was a Democrat, I'll remind you, a Democrat member of Congress from Hawaii. Just, we'll forget all of that because, again, doesn't paint a good narrative for the left. Remarkable information. Great show this morning. Appreciate all of our commentary coming in on our YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook live chats this morning. And again, appreciate the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Give them a call at 910-251-6088 or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Don't forget to sign up for the Nick Craig Morning Line email. Links for that available on the website, nickcraig.com. We're back with you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., streaming live, YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and of course, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Thursday.